Hey, White Sox fans, guess what? Before you know it, it's another podcast with me, your host. My name is Brett Valentini. I host these podcasts. And guess what? It's an intimate affair. We have 75 staff members, but only one stepped forward, as he often does. I will even say usually does for a group podcast. It's Super Joseph Reeses, manning the Indianapolis field office. Crystal O'Keefe, the other half of the field office, has been working overtime with six-pack of stats, evidently could not take time out to join Joe and be legit in a full Indianapolis field office effort. But understanding the burdens there, you are really carrying the entire office on your shoulders, Joe. No pressure, but hey, let's get number 64 rolling. Welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Yes, great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, we are going to, we're in the dog days. I guess we're past the dog days, but we're still in dog days because the White Sox have run away with this division. And so really the last, 2 months of this year are going to end up seeming like the White Sox are maybe playing out of string. Of course, we're still going to micromanage every single game, even though the results, the day-to-day results might not be the biggest deal. It's certainly not going to make or break a division win for the White Sox, it seems. Inevitable that the White Sox are going to be winning the division. The magic number is now 18. Cleveland has somehow worked itself back above 500, which was unexpected, but we'll see if that holds. Running down the usual stats before we break down this team, Joe, the run differential pace for the White Sox is 97 wins. That's slowly gone down over the course of the season because they're just not playing very well in the second half. The legit just straight on winning percentage, if you project it to the end of the season where they're at right now, is a 93 win team, which again, anybody would have taken before the season began. White Sox are the third best team in the American League. They're just a half game behind the Astros. And believe me, that half game is going to play a big role in whether or not the White Sox can do much in the playoffs if everything holds for another 3-4 weeks. If they still end up behind Houston, trouble. If they can eke ahead of Houston, certainly not going to catch Tampa, eke ahead of Houston just to get that home field in the first round. If it turns out that those two teams are still 2-3 in the American League, that's going to be a big advantage, White Sox. But of course, there's a lot of stuff to talk about and might just be material given the state of the starting rotation. So, Joe, we talked last mothership podcast about what the White Sox need to do against Pittsburgh and Kansas City, go 5-0, go 1-5, whatever. And I think you've always been pretty reasonable. You're like, hey, I want them to win five, but if they don't, I'm not going to throw myself off a cliff. I've got responsibilities to the Indianapolis field office. So understanding a 3-2 little stretch here certainly left some wins on the table, but not disastrous and sort of doesn't really matter. Anyway, Joe, your feelings about the team here heading into action next on September 7th.
Yeah, so this past five games against relatively weak opponents, I would say 3-2 was about as well as they should have done. I'm fine playing it safe as far as not asking pitchers to have too heavy of a workload when a top priority should be making sure that everyone is healthy for next month.
Joe, given that Tony's already done that in the first half of the season by working the starters to death, but we'll get to that. Go ahead.
Right. the winning three out of the five doesn't upset me. Like, obviously, today's win left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth just because the offense just was not really doing anything. I mean, just the six singles, not going to win too many games like that. But overall, they took care of business against Pittsburgh, and it's just Kansas City. They've had trouble against them this season, lost the season series 10-9, but that's just some randomness going on there, I think. And that 19 game sample size isn't super large. Kansas City is just, a tough place for the White Sox to win. And so it doesn't surprise me that much that they dropped two out of the three and is not really a reason to hit the panic button.
Joe, I'm going to play the alarmist role because if the White Sox can't win in Kansas City, I don't know how they're going in Houston, but okay. Of course, we all know that. So, Does it seem, Joe, to you, I don't know. It seemed like they played a bunch of games like first month of the season, and then they're done now, early September. When the Royals were better, when they were even briefly in first place, it seemed like the White Sox played them better early in the season. It seems like since they've sort of become lame, they're like maybe going 50-50 against them. And I wish that hadn't been the case. I wish White Sox had realized, hey, wait, they're actually not playing above their heads anymore. They don't have some strange first place confidence like they had in April. It'd be nice if they could say, like, wait, this is Kansas City. How are we getting six singles against Kansas City? But those games are in the rearview mirror, I suppose.
Absolutely. And yeah, maybe it's just a feeling of we don't have to take these games against this team particularly seriously. I don't know if there's like a slightly different mentality that's gone into that, or if it's but I would think the more likely outcome is just, you know, Hawk used to say you win 60 and you lose 60 every time. And I think this past series were two of those 60 where they just lose regardless. And, they just happen to come against the Royals this time around.
Joe, I'm not going to call you out, but we're not 10 minutes into this and you're the numbers guy. You're the analyst. I'm not. I'm just the clown. And you're invoking Hawk Harrelson to somehow rationalize this team. Okay, I'm clearly playing bad cop in these podcasts like I usually do. But let's talk a little bit about, I mean, clearly this question answers itself, I suppose. But at the current state of this White Sox rotation, as unbelievable as it's been for at least a good 120 games, I know we're at the 130 mark, but I mean, certainly through the All-Star break, unbelievably dynamite, well beyond anything we could have hoped for, given the question marks going into the season. It's not uncommon or unheard of for guys to wear down and maybe even break down in the dog days, whether you're a playoff team or you're a team that's just going to go home on October 3rd. But this White Sox team is obviously going to the playoffs. They're going to need health top to bottom as much as possible for the postseason. And the rotation is showing its biggest cracks at a point where we really would rather not see it. We have Lance Lynn on the injured list, and you could argue that's just Lance Lynn taking a breather. Cool, that's fine. Lucas Giolito, hamstring, certainly, thank God, not an arm, not a shoulder, you know, not a head, not a chest, a hamstring. Okay. Carlos Rodon, we now know, getting pushed back. Not sure if he's pitching in Oakland or not, or just pitching later in the Oakland series, but he needs a breather. He's fatigued. He's admitting he can't get out there. And he came back. The big worry was, would he pitch again this season when he first went out? Okay, good. It was answered that he could pitch again and pitch all right. But now, what, when two starts maybe after that injured list thing, one start, two start, now already fatigued again. And I understand, important to do it now. You can miss a game against Oakland or Texas if you're sure to line up against Houston or Tampa. But give me your assessment of the starting rotation, because it's making me, the nails are still pretty long actually, but it's making me start to bite the nails, Joe.
For sure. There's a number of concerning points about the pitching staff right now. It's certainly nothing to scoff at as far as these recent injuries, but, like you said, important thing is getting them back for an ALDS matchup against what will likely be the Houston Astros. Certainly important to make sure that players are well rested. Much better to be safe than sorry with regards to the recent injuries that have popped up. On the bright side, I felt that earlier in the season, the rotation was largely carrying the team a lot of the way. And with the return of Luis Robert and Yasmani Grandal, who are on fire, they've had less of a responsibility to carry the team, and they've been able to win a few games even without having a good performance from the pitching staff. For example, on the Saturday game, Lopez and Kopech had rough nights, but you know, they managed to put up 10 on the board. And prior to those injuries, I don't know if, like, prior to the return of those players I mentioned, the Robert and Grandal, I don't know if that gets done. Yeah, mainly I'm hoping for them to just get back with the team for October. It's certainly concerning recently seeing them hit the injured list, but just hoping they get back to it.
Again, you're a clever guy, Joe, so it's no surprise that you chose the Saturday game to talk about, because, of course, a great example of what would be the equivalent of maybe a get knocked out of the box if you're a starter, maybe in the third inning, would be today's game, Sunday's game, where the White Sox muster 6 singles against Kansas City against a starter who has incredible potential but has not put it together this season. And that's a team at fairly close to full health. No Tim Anderson, but some of the excuses that could be used, no Eloy, no Luis, are not around anymore. And when you come out with an effort to win a series with 6 singles and get handcuffed by a rookie pitcher, that's problematic. But you know what, Joe? We're going to talk about the problematic offense or the great offense, because you're going to find some great numbers for me. I know I'm going to be very, very encouraged. My nails are going to go real long. They're not going to be nibbled at all. But we're going to do that after the break. We're going to take a quick break here on the Southside Sox podcast number 64. We will be back with Super Joseph Reeses in just a moment. Hey, guess what? Moment is up. It is the Mothership podcast number 64. I am speaking with Joe Reeses, and Joe does a clever thing here. His coverage he covers both the minors and the major league team, and his major league day, I want to say, is Tuesday. He does a little double dip. He dips into the 6-pack of stats. He dips into regular game recap, which is a load of work. It's not easy to do. He takes on a big day those days. So he deserves and earns the fact that whenever they win, that's a double win for him. Joe Reeses, he is back in the game on the standings board. He's just a half game out of first place among all our recappers. It's no small feat, because we've got some pretty good records out there. I believe it's 1-2 with the Indianapolis field office. I believe Christopher O'Keefe still just is nudged ahead of you, Joe. So Indianapolis is representing for the White Sox. If we did not have Indianapolis, the White Sox might not even be heading to the playoffs. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, welcome to the second half of this show. We talked a little bit about the pitching staff. I don't even know. We may just skip the bullpen because they're sort of depressing anyway. Kopech, I mean, I think we tweeted out, who would have ever thought that Michael Kopech would have almost double the ERA in almost the same number of innings as Ronaldo Lopez before the season? I think the answer would be zero people, but that's where we're at now. So even Michael Kopech, the guy we thought was nails and might even get spot starts in the playoffs, now it's like, okay, you know, pitch with his left hand. What's going on? Let's get this guy straight. Let's talk a little bit about the lineup, Joe. You know, it's concerning when you see an effort like Sunday where you really pretty much still have, you're pretty close to full strength. You're never, let's face it, Joe, you're never going to be full strength, certainly not in September, probably not in the playoffs. Usually opening day, you're not full strength. White Sox were hit on the offensive side by a ton more injuries than was fair or was average. But then on the other hand, their pitching staff was relatively intact. Now we're seeing that flip, and the offense has got to pick up maybe the starting rotation in the bullpen. And on a game like Sundays, and even Fridays, you know, maybe they didn't do that. Is there concern? Do you think this is a offense that's still gelling? We got guys who are still relatively new coming back. Luis Robert, Yasmani Grandal took a pretty decent pause. Eloy Jimenez. I mean, these are guys who missed substantial portions of the season. Do we just give them more time? Is there concern that this offense isn't gelling the way we want it to? Because playoffs seem a long way away, but you know, we're a month and ticking.
Yeah, I think this might be an issue where some of the players are just not gelling, like you said. It's just when Gavin Sheets has gotten quite a bit of recent playing time. He's been solid. I don't know how much I would be comfortable asking him to do in a high leverage situation in the playoffs. Obviously, for the sake of fatigue over a long season, I know, yeah, Grandal is, you know, recently back from injury. He's really the only catcher who I trust with a like with a starting role come playoff time. And yeah, I know that there's been a debate of Zavala versus Collins. I do agree with the majority recently of Zavala being better. They've been pretty similar overall at the plate, and Zavala is certainly a better defender. But really neither of them are very promising as the on the major league roster. So having Grandal back and catching nearly every game come playoff time will be big for them. Because again, yeah, like Sheets, just don't have that much confidence in Zavala right now. And it's difficult to also emphasize it's difficult to overstate how important Tim Anderson is to the team. And they're like, when he goes to the injured list, there's just kind of a different level of, I guess, energy on the roster. And of course, yeah, there's less TWTW and there's less overall production. He's, you know, a solid shortstop, on just a great two-way player overall. And it's been great to see that over the past few seasons. Probably face of the team right now, if I had to pick one. And having him back will go a long way for them.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Joe Reese's data analyst, numbers guy, Sox math champion 600 times over. That is his second citation of Hawk Harrelson in this podcast, and I probably won't forget that. I probably have stored that in my head now to remember to tease and chide Joe with. But yes, the TWTW of Tim Anderson is off the charts. And here's the problem. You point out that when he's not there, the team is different. And absolutely, we're seeing that proven right now. Here's the problem. Tim, for what he does when he is on the field, has found a way since he's really moved into that upper echelon. You know, he sort of had the first half of his career was sort of getting his legs under him, getting into becoming a major leaguer and becoming a star in the middle of the infield. With all the improvements he's made over the last three seasons, including this one, and of course, last one being, you know, a third of a season, he's even scaled to last season. He's only played about 75% of the games. So that's 25% of the games the White Sox are expected to somehow find that gear without really the motor of the lineup. And I mean, you know, injury's injury. What can you do? But that's unfortunate. You'd like to see a full season from Tim because this team would be even better and not just projected to only those were air quotes for those of you listening, because I know most of you do, only 93 wins. Let's move to, oh, I'm sure a favorite topic of many of our listeners and readers, because the debate about Tony La Russa is always a delicious and delightful one to them. And I know there are many people who want to yell at me and people like Lee Allen about harping on some of the shortcomings of our manager, despite the fact he's in the Hall of Fame. And listen, there's no argument. This team is in first place. He hasn't, crashed the team, so to speak, Joe. But, you know, today he post-game mentioned how the three home runs, and that is, I believe in our coverage today, it came out eight of Salvador Perez's 41 homers, which, by the way, different capture Salvador Perez is not a Hall of Famer, but if he keeps hitting 40 homers at age 85 or whatever he is now, he will be in the Hall of Fame. Yes, he will. But those three homers, Joe, were preventable. And, you know, you'd think the guy who, like, makes out the lineup card and calls most, if not all, the pitches and you know, has a pretty, I would guess, sort of heavy hand on the team, might have a role in the preventable home runs. If you combine team war, if you combine run differential, which is sort of the soup I put together in terms of the managerial war that I like to do that no one else pays much attention to or cares about and scoffs me over, the White Sox are about four wins less than they should be at. This team should be even at a better pace than they're at. That falls to some degree on Tony. Maybe it's bad luck, bad weather, catching all the toughest pitchers. Some of it could be luck, travel. Bad food pregame, postgame. I don't know, but I think some of it, if not all of it, has to fall on the manager's shoulders. So Talk to me a little bit about your level of confidence in Tony and what he's shown. And will there be a different gear between now? We've got a month stretch run to the playoffs. There will be playoffs for the White Sox and then into the playoffs. Do you expect a different gear from a guy who's been away from the game for a decade? Or have you seen things leading up to now that says, okay, listen, he's playing more of a long game. He is playing some sort of chess here. Calm down.
I don't think he'll shift into a completely different gear. I think that you mentioned the statistic of the gap between their actual wins and their expected wins, which I think is a completely fair to point out. I think I would put maybe a little bit less of a share of blame for him on that than probably you would, but it is still worth noting for sure that, I mean, there are a couple of games during this season where, you know, he makes the decision not to challenge when really the downside of challenging it is basically zero. Like, you know, you get into the sixth or the seventh inning and you just have nothing to lose at that point to do that.
He's got somewhere to be, Joe. He's got somewhere to be.
Right. Right. So like that's an issue. Hopefully we don't see that coming up again. The couple of other major issues that come to mind would be, of course, the whole issue with Mercedes against the Twins a few months ago. That one was probably the dumbest thing he's done all year, is, you know, defend the Twins' decision to throw at him. But yeah, I don't know if I'll ever get over that entirely. But you know, it's in the past now, and like I will have to admit, like I thought he would just be a bad match for this team with a very, you know, young group with full of guys who aren't afraid to challenge the conventional unwritten rules. I just figured that he would mess with that culture, and despite that fit, which seemed to be a bad one, it's worked out okay for him, and the players seem to like him, and you know, that is important, I think, to point out.
Yeah, unless there's something we don't know about, we're not hearing about, and I think it would, even in this Zoom era, more would leak. There'd be more throwing under the bus and hints. You're right. Somehow this mesh has happened, and you know, something when we first heard in the news, that was probably our first concern. Well, there are a lot of concerns, but in terms of a practical sense, the biggest concern was how in the world you go from, you know, Papa Ricky Renteria to now a guy, you know, admittedly not Tony's fault. I mean, shoehorned into a situation where over years, you know, they've gelled through the rebuild. You wondered how he would mesh there, and it does seem like with maybe a few missteps, that gel has been pretty good. And let me make it clear, part of the reason of trying to come up with something like a managerial war is to take the emotional element out of it. People hated Ricky, by and large, hated Ricky Renteria. The truth is, last couple of years, he wasn't nearly the poor manager he was early on. The whole idea is to try to isolate managerial performance. And I know that sort of goes hand in hand with the general manager job. And yes, it goes hand in hand with pregame food and weather. And yeah, I know it's a lot of stuff, but the manager is the guy who bears the most responsibility for that stuff in between the lines. And right now, Tony's in the negative. If he was in the positive, I'd be acknowledging that. Like, I cannot believe this, Joe. This guy is doing better than expected. He's given this team if it's 2005 and it's Ozzie Guillen, it's like this guy has been magic this year. He's added like six wins to this team. And, you know, that's the point, as you know. Despite your predilection for Hawk Harrelson, you know, as a data guy, you know, listen, the black and white doesn't, you know, lie. We got the spreadsheet. It gives you the number and you say, well, okay, that's what it is. Now let's try and figure out how we explain that. But okay. So, you know, if you think I'm just out to dog Tony La Russa, no, I want him to be great. I want him to somehow make up the deficit he's already created for this team over 5 months. I want him to make it up this month. I want him to be at least even. I want him in the playoffs to just make us shake our heads and go, holy cow, this guy, he's magic. Okay, he's magic. I'm not sure that'll happen, but I just thought some of the comments post-game were entertaining, you know, aside from the fact that he's the way in, like, voluntarily on Albert Pujols. It doesn't always just seem like, and maybe this is his long game. I'm just not going to get stressed about any individual game, Joe. I know you fans are freaking out and everybody's on Twitter crying. We don't want to lose a series or a season series to Kansas City, but I don't care. We're in first place and I'm focused on the playoffs. And if that's his long game, great. We win a World Series. I don't think anybody's going to argue about whether his managerial war is, -4. Who cares? They got a ring. So they could have won 100 games and won the World Series. Okay, big deal. Who cares? But some calm words from Joe Reese's, just keeping it steady as he usually does. It's a good foil. We got good cop, bad cop, good fan, bad fan. We're both eating similar food, though. That's one thing. You're not like eating a big slab of ribs and I'm eating the elotes. When we're sitting down at the ball game, Joe, we're pretty much eating the same food.
Absolutely.
And there's a few others. It's a big staff, but there's a few others, and good for all of them. One day we'll just have, maybe in the off season, we'll just have, we'll just have the vegan, vegetarian, the Southside Sox podcast. And if nobody listens, I don't care. We're still going to do it. Okay. All right. Well, that is Joe Reese's. And, again, dad analyst, big numbers guy, been hardcore six pack of stats from the start. He's maybe done more than anyone. Him and Ashley Sanders probably running neck and neck in there. But again, got to say, Hawk Harrelson devotee. Absolutely. Big, big fan of the Hawk and his numbers. And what can I say? Who might argue with? He's the data guy. Who might argue with? Joe, I don't know if we've provided listeners hope, disdain, fear, but I know you probably tried to pull in the hope side, and there's nothing to feel bad about. This is a first place team that's going to make it to the playoffs. Just a matter of who they draw. And let's hope that the top 26 on the team are close enough to full health to make maximum damage, win or lose, maximum damage in the playoffs. And I'm sure that's what the team is aiming toward. And that's what we as fans are hoping for as well. So thanks for providing a steady hand and some calm. And again, the really citing the key Hawk Harrelson stats, because that's really what we need on these podcasts.
Yes, my pleasure. I'm very glad I was able to bring him into this.
Absolutely. Next podcast where we need more Hawk content, I'm not going to even record it without Joe there. Well, thanks to Joe. Thanks to everybody listening and reading and sometimes even watching. Without you, we're not here, and there's no purpose for us doing this. You might argue there's no purpose for us doing a podcast early in September when everything is pretty much predetermined anyhow. I don't care. I'm not going to listen to you if you say we don't need to do one, because we're probably going to do one another couple days too. That's just how we roll here. We give you more content than you could possibly ever want. And it comes at a very low, 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 low subscription price. That's the nice thing. It's a win-win for you. So still and all, thank you for listening. Thank you for reading. We'll be back with more Southside Sox Mothership podcasts, probably sooner than you want one.